I'm not sure, but what about the bliss? Was the bliss not really continuing?
That was subsiding. The bliss was, I was beginning to become suspicious of the bliss. Headaches went on. After I returned from India, and I was living in Marin County, and Paul and I got in business together, and Connie. No, they were going on a regular basis. So,
unless you want to talk more about the stay with Dada in India.
Well, I just said that Dada and I chatted and talked, and we had a nice talk, and we didn't talk much about the experience and so forth. But we stayed the night, and the next morning we caught a plane and went to Egypt to continue our journey, and eventually back to San Francisco.
Did you go to the pyramids?
Yeah. Went inside the king's chamber.
Right. That means you crawled in. You had to crawl in for that, right?
Well, you could. Yeah, you could stoop into it. No, you could.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Maybe they opened it up, but they went around to Luxor and stayed there, and that was very interesting. You certainly are dwarfed by the immensity of the Egyptian architecture. It's immense. It's tall. What they were building was something really. The statement they were making was something incredible.
Yeah, you mean the pyramids?
The pyramids and the temples. Temples of Karnak. Yeah, they really did it. Everything was big. You know, huge. The statues of Rama are incredible. Egypt,
right? Right. Now, do you want to tell us how that? Just to jump ahead, how did the headache stop?
Well, I was in a couple of years ago. I was in Bangalore just to visit with Yuji. He was there visiting for his annual Indian month that he was doing. And there were a lot of people there, though. 75 or 80 people every day were crowded into that little room in Chandrasekhar's house. And it was like a real circus going on. By this time, Yuji had really given up saying very much to people. And it was just like a free-for-all and a sideshow going on, a circus. And people were... He would ask people to recite poems or dance and sing and... And anyway, he did very little actual teaching or talking. He sort of had become very, very subdued in that way. I stayed there, I don't know, 5 or 6 days. I stayed with Paul and Lewis and a couple of Mitra, a German fellow, and a girl who had been hanging out with Eugene, cooking for him. She was a yoga instructor. And they had a house that was near Chandrasekhar's house, and I stayed there. And I think after 5 or 6 days, I said, well, it's time for me to go back to Bombay. And after lunch, Eugene was washing his hands in a little sink that was outside the kitchen. There's a little extra sink there. Indians have lots of little sinks and odd places. Mm-hmm. So I saw him there, so I walked up to him. I said, well, Yuji, I'm going to go catch my plane and head back for Bombay. And he looked up at me, and he looked at me with this childlike innocence. It was like a little child looking at me. He had that capacity sometimes to be a little baby, like, almost. And I looked at him, and he said, Bob, he said, are you still having those headaches? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, Yuji, yeah. After 20 some years, I'm still having them. And he said, I had the headaches so long, he said. And that's all he said. And then he said, maybe we'll meet later, by and by, he said. That was his standard line, or maybe we'll meet later on in the by and by. So I said, okay, Eugene. And I said goodbye to him and said, I'll see you later. Bye bye. And I left. And I didn't think anything of it. You know, I caught my plane and went back to Bombay. And a couple of days went by, and third day, fourth day, fifth day. And I suddenly realized that I hadn't had a headache. And I thought, well, that's unusual. That's nice. The fifth, sixth, seventh day, eighth day. Then I realized that they were gone.
Wow.
And I haven't had any headaches since then. And that's been now, 4 or 5 years now. So.
Right. He died almost 2 years ago. It'll be March 2009. Yeah. It'll be 2 years. And it was probably 2 years before that. So four years. So yeah. Maybe 2005.
Yeah. I had gone, Sam and I went to Switzerland to do my recordings with people, my interviews, and it was there I tried to talk to Yuji about the headaches, and he wouldn't answer my question.
Well, what's this, before the encounter at the Little Sink?
No, after. I went to Switzerland to do some recording, some interviews, and Sam, his Indian friend, went with me to use the camera.
What were you interviewing?
Oh, I interviewed like 40 odd people at Know UG, and I have this collection of very interesting interviews of what and how he affected their lives, what changes took place.
Right. But someday you'll do something with them.
Hopefully.
Right. But you're saying on that trip you wanted to tell UG the headaches went away.
Yeah, I was in his room, and there's always a lot of people around him, usually. Once in a while, you find him alone. But I said, Yuji, but I don't want to talk to you about something. And he looked at me, and I said, you know those headaches? And the moment I said headaches, he turned his head and turned away. The words came out like, bleep, 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 bleep. Couldn't find one word to... I couldn't talk. So I said, okay.
You mean you couldn't talk once he turned away? Once he turned away, you wanted to continue, but you couldn't.
I couldn't talk, yeah.
That's neat.
Words wouldn't come. Couldn't form them.
So, and that was the last time... You dealt with the headaches, or brought it up, or other than talking to
people. After that, I never mentioned it again. I realized, well, you know, okay, shut up.
You still believe that he was teaching you something? You know, you projected that he was teaching you.
Well, I'm projecting that he did something.
Yeah, and then when he wouldn't talk about it after, you said, "Oh, shut up," you know, like. You didn't have the gall to say, what do you call him, Yuji? Yuji, I want to tell you. You wouldn't interrupt him. You wouldn't say, hey, buddy, look back at me. I'm telling you something.
I couldn't talk.
Oh, I see. You couldn't.
The words wouldn't come out.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like he had a magnetic shield. In other words, you did want to bring his attention back to him.
Yeah, but then I realized, what? You can't talk. Shut up. people will have those kind of experiences around him, you know, where you could, you know, do things, you know, or something happened to you, you know.
Right. Interesting.
So then, no question, you know, this guy's got it, you know. Anyway,
Okay, go ahead. I was going to go back, but go ahead.
Well, the last time I saw him was with just before he died, and then I said very little to him. What can you say, you know?
Yeah, you saw him when he was dying.
Yeah.
Well, when you say that, you know, a couple years before that, he wasn't as talkative, a little more subdued.
Yeah.
Did he still have the abyss in his eyes, or the effect emanating from?
Oh yeah. But he had talked so much and said, and all these books have been written and tapes and videos and audios and all that's intact. I just think he felt that he didn't need to say anything anymore, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Words are not going to do it. Being around him is not going to do it. If it happens, it happens, and it happens because it happens. He became very, you know, very a very different mode of operating. He still gave advice, but to people, but it would come in very quiet periods when maybe you were just with him, just the two of you, or three or four, maybe, you know. But usually there was a big crowd around him, you know, and it was outrageous. It was nonsense. You're silly, you know, so to speak.
And would you say he was subdued by 2000 or subdued before 2000?
He was, in 1995, he started to talk less.
Mm. And that's 16 years met him.
Yeah. He was staying in my house in California with Paul and I in 95, and he said then, okay, I've said enough, I'm not going to talk anymore, he said.
Mm.
He said, oh, Yuji, what do you mean? You have to talk, you know. You have to stimulate us. You have to keep us entertained. And after that, it started slowing down. And in a few years, 5 or 6 years, it became less and less and less. Till finally, he just was not talking at all, hardly.
But people were still coming and looking at him.
Yeah, still coming and hanging around him.
When you said no, you got to keep talking in 95. Did he respond to that?
No, probably not.
He began not talking. Yeah, he began not talking.
Yeah. Well, I went to India. He went to India. He left California, and Paul and I had sold the business, and that we had the coffee shop, and went to India. He gave us some tickets, air tickets, two of them. And with the invitation that we were to come to India and be his guest in Yerkad at a palace. So palace turned out to be a bungalow in a hill station that was very simple, very, very simple place. Nothing to do there but go crazy. monkeys and birds and cobras, and a few stray dogs, and goats, and chickens. Who was there?
Would the cobras come in your home?
No. The cobras were coming into the Yuji's place in Bangalore, out in the the farmhouse, a place called the farmhouse, where he and the major were staying together.
Yeah.
Major Doctor, who was a retired army major that met Yuji.
Yeah, you write about him.
Yeah, and the cobras used to come to that house there.
What is one supposed to do with a cobra? What do you do with a cobra?
Stay away.
I mean, do they... They don't attack. They don't attack.
They don't attack if you don't bother them, you know.
Yeah.
You know. They're fairly decent, you know, if you don't irritate them, or, you know. Yuji said that they're afraid of us because they know that we'll kill them.
Mm.
So they'll protect themselves if you get too close. You know?
But they will sit in your living room and things like that?
Well, they would come to Yuji and come in his rooms and hang out there.
and he would keep a few yards away from them, right? You keep a distance from them, even if you're Yuji.
Yeah, he just said that, you know, I mean, he said they came to visit him. I don't know, you know. have you seen these pictures of the god Shiva?
Yeah.
He's always depicted meditating up in the Himalayas, and there are cobras wrapped around his arms.
Yes.
Yeah, Yuji made some reference, you know, that cobras like people like him.
But when you saw him walking, would he keep his distance from them?
Not particularly, no. He said they would move with him, walk along with him.
So what would you do if you were in a room with a cobra? Just be careful.
Stay away. Stay away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even now when I see one, when I know they're defanged, I have, you know, these snake charmers have them in India. And I always say, you know, have the reaction, stay back.
Yeah, yeah. So this this restaurant you were talking about having in 95, is that the one that you have before you go to India in 79? Or you, what was it, began with C, cover, what's the name of the place that you had in 79?
Marvin Gardens. Marvin Gardens.
What about just before the cover counter?
Marvin Gardens in 1980.
Okay, what was the restaurant you took over in 78, 79 after leaving the Great Crepe?
Oh, that was called the Crossroads. I just stayed there for
Crossroads.
6 months, I think.
Did you...
I went to India.
After yeah, Crossroads?
Yeah, I helped get it going and got a
good
menu.
But you weren't the chef?
I stayed there 6 months. Yeah, I was the chef.
Oh, okay.
Manager. Chef.
Right. And chef.
Yeah, well, there were a number of chefs there, you know, because you had shifts. And
I see. But you had a little bit more to do as a manager.
Yeah, I had to wipe tears and be there if someone didn't show up.
Oh, okay. So you're doing this India trip. You're in Egypt, and from Egypt you go back to the California?
Well, I went to Europe. Paul and I went to Greece and Italy and Spain and London and New York and then back to San Francisco.
So you did the Connie trip. You did the Connie trip with another young person who was going to be your lover.
Yeah. My boyfriend.
Yeah. But you weren't lovers yet.
No, we were the best of friends.
Right. And so you'd see a lot of things, and do you get back in 81? Are you basically traveling all through 1980?
Paul and I got back in 1980, and we were gone about, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, something like that.
Right, so now Reagan's running for president, and you say, no, that guy will never get president. Yeah, Carter will beat him.
Carter's still president.
Right, yeah. But Reagan bought
a house in Sonoma. I thought that I should buy it because you have to reinvest, you know, or you have to pay capital gains, you know. So I got talked into buying a house in Sonoma County. I thought that would be nice to live out there. And so I was there for about a year, just about a year, and Yuji came to visit California, and he stayed in the house in Sonoma with Valentine for a short time. So then after that...
Robert, you may be hitting the table. That it was starting to get that static again. Be careful. Plug it in and...
All right. Okay. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. So Yuji came...
Yeah. So suddenly it was announced that Yuji was coming to California. We'd ask him to come to California. Please come. When we were in India. And he said, no, I've been to California. Why should I come to California, you know? I've been to California before. Why, California doesn't need, I don't need California. Why? Then he said, Valentine's never seen California, so we're coming to California. She must see California. Any excuse, you know, he would create.
But that was after you got back. That was after you got back, he announced that.
Yeah. Yeah. So he came to, they went to Mexico, and then Mexico to Los Angeles, Los Angeles to San Francisco, and he decided to stay in the Bay Area. And so he was looking around for a place to stay, and he stayed here, there. He stayed like 4 or 5 days in Sonoma, and then it was decided he would stay in Mill Valley, and he asked Terry to find a place. So Terry Newland found a place to rent, and Eugene Valentine moved in to a house in the outskirts of Mill Valley on the way to Stinson's Beach. A very nice house in the countryside there. So he stayed, three or four months in Mill Valley.
Did he pay the rent? Yep. Did he pay the rent?
Yeah.
What? He paid the rent. That brings up a point. Scott told me earlier he heard a YouTube or audio or something in the archives, and Yuji said that he didn't have to work because he had been given some money by some fool, some guy. Is that true? Does that sound true to you?
Oh, he always said things like that. He had enough money to budget himself to pay a rent there, and food is Indian. He eats very well. Whoever was at the house there would be invited for dinner, so it was always two meals a day were served, and Kim was there with Yuji, and Kim would do the cooking. So we'd all have Kim style Indian food, which was a vegetarian spread. And Valentine had some money coming in, so she had about $1,000 a month income coming in, pension.
Yeah.
So they were living on that. And at that time you could live on $1,000 a month in Mill Valley.
And they would and they would have a lot of food for people, for guests.
Yeah, yeah. Kim would go buy the food and cook it. And a lot of guests were there. There were Narayamurti, who later became Yuji's editor of all his books, and my book, and books that yet to come, came and he met Yuji in Carmel. Terry had arranged it. And there was also a spiritual guru from Los Angeles who was teaching tantric sex yoga. He heard about Yuji, and he came, and he stayed there and got blown away completely. He left the spiritual business. He got rid of his ochre robes, bought some jeans and some cowboy boots and a cowboy hat and a Levi's jacket. And the last we heard of him, he rented or bought a SUV, and he was headed for the hills.
Yeah. And that's a few years ago.
That was, back there in 1981. So Yuji stayed at the house there for a few months, and we brought lots of people. And then Douglas, who was still with Da Free John, started coming to see Yuji. And Paul Lind, Dr. Paul Lind, who was Da Free John's doctor, also came to see Yuji. And they were in a period of transition where coming to see Yuji eventually knocked Da Free John out of their background,
right.
And so they were reunited with Yuji. Paul Lind also. Paul had met Yuji in India back in about 1990, probably 1967 or 8. It was sometime after the calamity, and Yuji was staying in Malabarishwar for a few months each year, Bombay, Bangalore, Hyderabad. He had a little tour he would go on. And Paul Lind met him there. And Paul had just gotten out of the army. He was a doctor and served in Vietnam. And he was interested in spirituality and listened to J.K. and heard about Yuji and came to India to meet Yuji. So it's all these friends were reuniting.
Was Doug Rollstone rich yet?
No.
Okay. That's later.
Struggling to make ends meet.
Just before you go on, so you think that the main income for UG was Valentine? Do you think there was some other stuff?
Yeah.
It was the main thing.
Yeah. So UG was very, very clever. He invested money in Swiss accounts that earned very good interest. So
that would have been Valentine's money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had some gold bullion, so the story goes, and she gave it to him, and he said, just cash it in at the bank, and we'll invest this in a good account that earns money. What good is it having gold unless it's working? He said. You're very clever with money. He said, if he hadn't been for an enlightened man, he would have been a banker.
But he had worked in business years before.
No. Never done anything.
Not when he was in Chicago and he had that family?
No, he just gave talks and had cooking classes.
That's in the 40s, way back.
Yeah.
Okay.
His wife was working for the Encyclopedia Britannica. A job.
So Paul Lind and Doug Common, so now a core of California people are hanging on his work.
New people are coming. And I tried to introduce some old friends that I had that knew J.K. and Alan Watts, and they didn't take to UG too much. It was, I don't know, they didn't get it.
Did they come and see him?
Yeah, they came and met him and thought he was interesting, but they were translating what he was saying into what they thought J.K. was saying. Because at that time, lots of what you just said was just exactly the same words that J.K. used, you know.
Yeah.
And when you ask about that, UG said, yes, he's part of my background. He's part of, so those words are all there. It's part of my lingo.
Yeah.
Krishnamurti lingo.
Now, Worcester connects with you in 86 again. I remember that. And he thinks you told him about UG. Did you try to get him?
86?
In 86, he visited you because he was on his way up to Vancouver for the expo or something up there. And
where
that's
would that
when
be?
He. Beg your pardon?
Where would that be?
Vancouver, British Columbia.
No, but he said he connected with me. And
yeah, he and Paul Seibel came to see you. That's when you guys got locked out on the balcony.
You see, I don't remember this at all.
Okay, but the thing is that he remembers you talking about UG, and I'm just wondering if you were making much of an effort to turn Dave on to UG, or you didn't think it was worthwhile. I don't know. But do you remember?
I don't know. I don't remember this. I don't remember.
You don't remember him coming to see you in 86. You had the Marvin Gardens restaurant and all that. He talks about it, but you guys didn't go. You didn't go out and eat. He felt that you didn't really want to spend too much time with him. That was the vibe.
Where did he meet me? In my house? Or?
Yes, and there was a balcony.
There was a small balcony there, sliding glass doors.
Right, and what happened is that you guys were out there and then you got locked out. You couldn't get into the balcony. You couldn't get off the balcony. And that was, then he was forced, he says you were forced to talk to him for a couple hours, where up to that point you didn't want to talk to him too much.
There wasn't any place to sit out there on that balcony.
But you were forced to, so then you guys talked a bit.
No.
You don't remember that?
If I talked with David Worcester, we probably sat inside and talked. David has a way of twisting things, you know.
Well, you haven't heard all. I'll have to see which interview that was.
Honestly, you know, David's a sweet guy, but things get really turned around, twisted with him.
Right, it's just that
he reinvents his history, you know.
Yeah, but I was just thinking if I figured out which tape it was on, I'd have you listen to it, you know, and just hear him talk about that and see if that reminds you of anything. Maybe not.
Yeah, because that little balcony was very, You could just stand on it. It wasn't a chair.
Well, that's what he was saying. Yeah, that's what he said. It was a little balcony, and you were forced out there in a little balcony because you got locked out. So then you had to talk to Dave a bit longer than you were intending to.
Oh, I think we just, you know, probably I talked to him inside. I probably talked to him about UG because, you know, I have a problem in that area. You know, so.
Yes, you had OCD about UG, right?
Yeah.
I mean by problem, you mean you like to talk about him.
Yeah.
He remembers you
well,
talking.
If somebody asks me a question, then they get a response, you know.
So, right. So you were trying to turn people on from the old scene, but they didn't really take to UG. It was only new people.
There was a program on television on Channel 9, PBS, called Thinking Aloud with a Dr. Mishla. And
yes.
I thought maybe Yuji would do well on that. So I called Mishlov and I said to him about Yuji, and he said, yeah, he would be very interested. So I said, listen, I'm going to have a guy named Terry Newland call you, and he can set up an appointment for you to see Yuji because he's staying at Terry's flat, his little apartment in Mill Valley. So that happened. And Mishlov invited UG, and we had to really, you know, push UG to accept it. And UG said, no, I'm not going to talk on television. And we said, no, you gotta do this one thing for our sake, please. So he agreed to do it. But he said, only if you guys come, because I'll need your moral support. So, Krimala, Krim, Paul Arms, Terry and I and Eugene went to a college in Tiburon where Mishlov did his taping using the facilities at this college. They loaned their studio to him to do their taping. I had some deal of some kind. So I remember the first session went on for about 10 minutes, and then suddenly it stopped. And Yuji said, nope, it's not going right. It's finished. So it ended. And then we told Mishlov that to come and see Yuji and talk to him. So he did. And Yuji
he had already talked to him. He had already talked to him privately,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But now he asked him to come back.
Yeah, he asked him to come back, and then Yuji agreed to come back and try it again. then it worked. And Yuji talked for 2 hours. And Mishlov got, he got 2 hours or more. I think there were two sessions altogether. And it worked. But here's an interesting side note. There were two camera shoots. And there was a girl who was a cameraman, and her camera was to be locked on Yuji's shot, and the other camera was locked on Mishlov, and they would cut back and forth. Well, the girl had her camera on a close-up of Yuji, and these were lightweight Japanese cameras. They're not real heavy, and the technology was getting more refined. And all of a sudden, she fainted and she pulled the camera and tripod over on top of her and she fell flat on her back in the studio. And we had to revive her and have a drink. we asked Yuji, what's going on? And he just, you know, didn't offer any explanation. And she just said that she was overwhelmed.
She didn't get hurt.
No. But she was overwhelmed.
That's interesting. It shows the hypnosis people are under. And if someone can crack that, they collapse.
I don't know what happened. But Mishlov was quite... But then on Mishlov, he really paid attention to Yuji. You know, he realized there was some powerhouse was going on. Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys had to stop the taping to help the girl.
Yeah, the taping stopped, you know.
Yeah, okay. She got back, and did she get back in position again?
Yeah, I took a break and had a glass of water or something. Then that night, after the taping was over, it was about maybe 10 o'clock or something. So we suggested to Yuji, why don't we go to Pasand, which was an Indian restaurant in San Rafael, and have some Indian food. We're all hungry. We're thinking of ourselves. And he said, okay. So on the way out, going down the steps, Yuji started to fall himself. He started to fall over. And Terry grabbed him, and Yuji said, "I'm a little tipsy," he said. That was a word he used, meaning when he called it zonking out.
From the TV experience.
Well, footnote. This is my interpretation, of course, that Yuji would often fall into this state of unconsciousness. And in Indian yogic lore, this is a samadhi, state of samadhi, where you fall into this state. Ramakrishna used to fall into it very easily. If you looked at a picture of a god or, you know, Krishna, he would fall into ecstasies and zonk out. Well, Yuji also often would go unconscious, just suddenly. And often in the car, when you're riding around, he would just fall unconscious. But he was falling over. Terry hadn't caught him, he would have fallen on the steps.
Yeah, hurt himself.
Yeah. So we managed to get him to the restaurant, and he kind of came back, and we had some idlis and dosas and sambar, and spent the rest of the evening talking about, you know, the taping and so forth. So this started Yuji's interest to continue taping. So he said, "I will do 12 interviews, you know, then that's it." Well, I think he did more, but anyway, he always would have these fixations like, "I will do this, and then that's finished."
Right.
I think he did far more than 12. He taped in Europe and India and in America.
On TV shows. Yeah, established shows. Yeah.
Yeah. And some not so established.
Right.
Some
you mean like
television, BBC, and some New York. They were not
cable.
Cable stations. Yeah.
Yeah. Manhattan Neighborhood Network, MNN. The public access stuff.
He did a national television thing in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So.
Are these all on one of these websites?
Yep. Yeah. Scott has access to them now through.
Okay.
UGKrishnamurti.org.
Yeah. One subnote, Robert, you mentioned Krim. Is Kim or Krim the cook for UG in that period?
There's Kim and Krim.
Two people, okay.
Kim is still with UG until Valentine goes to India. And that ends not only Valentine's living with India with UG, but also Kim living with UG.
What do you mean Valentine goes to India? No, you say Valentine goes to India and leaves Yuji?
When she got to be too forgetful, Alzheimer's condition was settling in, and she was just couldn't be, you know, she was just out of it. She was sinking into dementia. So,
what year is that?
The year Krishnamurti died. Was that
86?
Yeah.
In 86. And so then Yuji traveled without her from that point on.
Yeah. Then he was free to travel without her.
And you're saying that...
He was traveling faster, going around the world a couple times a year.
Right.
Instead of just once.
But Kim, you say Kim was his cook until the year 86 when Valentine left.
Actually looking after Valentine a lot and taking care of the cooking and so forth. Then after that, you did his own cooking.
Did Kim go to India with Valentine?
Yeah.
Oh,
and so he stayed with her for a while, a few months, and then he left. And then Yuji gave him a car and some money and told him, okay, buddy, you're on your own. Thank you.
And that was that?
Yep.
Did he disappear, or are you in touch with him?
Kim's in New York now, and he became a Jehovah Witness.
Jesus.
He
didn't learn anything.
From the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And what nationality?
You just said that's in him. That's what he wants.
Right. What nationality was Kim?
Kim was African and Jewish.
African and Jewish.
Yeah. Really
well,
interesting character.
Right. I think it's been an hour, maybe 45 minutes. I think we should. We've reached this point where he's going to start doing TV shows, and I guess you'll be telling us more what you do parallel to babysitting him when he makes his tours through California. That would be our next session.
Okay, fine.
One thing, maybe you and Paul buy Marvin Gardens, or King of Marvin Gardens, what's it called, the restaurant?
Marvin Gardens. It was named after the King of Marvin Gardens.
Yeah, the Jack Nicholson movie.
Yeah, we just kept the name. We bought it, and the name was Marvin Gardens, and we didn't see any necessity to change the name. We just, that's a great name. You know, everybody knows Marvin Gardens. It's on Monopoly, right?
Yes.
It's one of the properties in on Monopoly.
Right, Monopoly.
But it's also a real place too.
Oh, okay.
Back east.
Like New York City.
No, not New York. The other place.
Oh, Atlantic City.
Atlantic City. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying that the owner of that restaurant did name it after the 1972 movie King of Marvin Gardens.
The original owner. Three or four owners owned it, and we were the maybe third or fourth owner. And we turned it around and made it a real restaurant. And as you
were,
we made it the top restaurant in Marin County, he said.
Was it the top restaurant?
It was a unique restaurant, I'll put it that way.
Right.
And there were lots open for lunch.
Only open for lunch.
And brunch.
And you start that in 81?
Yeah.
How long did you do that?
Till 85.
85? No, 95.
Probably 95. 12 years. 12 years.
12 years. And were you the chef there?
Yeah, I was the chef, and then eventually I taught everything I knew to Mauricio, who was from El Salvador, and he became the chef. And I kind of, you know, was in the background. I did the salads.
And managed.
Yeah, and Paul did the real hardcore management.
Okay. So you're a good cook?
Yep.
Did you start cooking?
I learned how to cook. You know, I had a fantasy about Alan Hooker's restaurant in Ojai. And I thought if he did it, I can do it. Because he wasn't a cook to start with. He never had any training. He was just cooking is an intuitive process. You know, what would go good with this and this and this? Then pretty soon you find out that certain combinations work. And this and that. And, you know, you trial and error, you learn. And that's the best teacher. And I had learned to cook in the Great Crepe and Crossroads restaurant. I was cooking.
But you didn't cook for yourself in the 20s and 30s of your and 40s of your life. You weren't a cook back then.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, but you really got into it with the Great Crepe.
Well, San Francisco, I cooked at home. We cooked our meal. Connie and I cooked. He was a good cook too.
Did you cook at the? He was the main cook at the Center of Integration, right?
Well, we had a lot of ladies there that cooked, you know.
Oh, okay.
He
so you,
He was in charge of the money.
But Connie was a cook before you, right?
No. But Connie became a... Connie learned cooking, too, the same way. He just did it. And he was a cook for Nolan Bushnell.
Yeah,
so Connie managed the house, you know. He arranged the cooks. Eventually, he just called a chef and said, we want this, you know. He wasn't doing the cooking himself. But he could cook. He was a very, very good cook. Very careful. Very intuitive. He learned Italian cooking, Indian cooking, you know.
And he was doing the Bushnell work before and during your period at Marvin Gardens.
After Marvin Gardens, he left. Yeah.
After Marvin.
He was in Marvin Gardens, and he just became impossible. So.
Yeah, but when did he leave Bushnell?
After we sold Marvin Gardens.
Well, that's 95, but that's, or yeah. Well, 12 years,
was,
maybe.
Wait a minute. He left Bushnell when Paul and I lived in Sonoma. That would be 81, maybe.
Yeah.
81. He was just out of it, and Bushnell had to let him go. So Margot and Connie left. And Connie came and lived with Paul and I in Sonoma, to recuperate from his being, you know, let go. Bushnell was very nice. He gave him stock in his pizza company and stock in another company and a big bonus and a car, and he bought him a Honda Civic, and you know, gave him a real, you know, Bushnell liked Connie because Connie was sweet and very kind and would do anything for anyone. But this drinking thing was just out of control.
Mm. So yeah. He hung out with you guys, and did he start working at Marvin Gardens with you?
No. He was in Marvin Gardens in 81 when we bought it. We can go into that. Yeah.
All right. Let's go with that. Next session is how Connie and you reconnect through Marvin Gardens.
Yeah. And how UG is continuing to come to California and making the Bay Area his base. But he said, I'm not going to leave my heart in San Francisco. He liked that song and he liked to make a joke about it, about not leaving his heart in San Francisco.
Right. Well, did he listen to music much? Did you ever catch him doing that?
No. He liked movies.
He
into music. He liked Madonna and Boy George, Michael Jackson.
How could he hear them?
Television.
Just TV would be on there in his
place.
Yeah,
he liked Boy George.
Okay.
Madonna was something.
He thought Madonna was what?
Something special.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Robert.
He had a sense for anybody that was individual.
Yeah. Now this has been an interesting session number 9. You know, we heard this whole period of transition of turning point. Very interesting.
House of Transition. That's a good name.
No, it's the house of transition. Then the next chapter is the turning point, and you did the turning point.
Yeah.
The turning point. So that was an interesting session.
Okay, dears.
All right.
In India, they say dear. Doesn't mean you're gay. It's quite a common statement for a man to call you dear. Okay, dear.
Okay. All right, dear.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
Okay, thank you, boys. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.